You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 412. Today is Sunday, July 29th, 2018, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt. And before we start, please, everybody, help out the podcast by subscribing, writing a review, sharing links on Twitter and Facebook. Sam Freeman will start for the Braves tomorrow if you don't help us.
Oh, God.
Yikes. Ooh. All right. It may be the deadliest thing.
It was. That's the most savage plea you've made.
All right, guys. In tonight's show, we'll discuss Sean Newcomb's incredible game on Sunday, the month of July for the Braves, a trade deadline update, and our favorite Chipper Jones memories. But first, a quick break. So, guys, Sean Newcomb's last five starts before Sunday's finale against the Dodgers were not so good. 24 innings, 17 earned, 6 homers, 18 strikeouts, and 18 walks. And then there was Sunday, one strike away from a no-hitter. Mm. Newcomb struck out 8, walked 1, threw 81 strikes in his 134 pitches, and was simply masterful. I mean, it was easy 94-95 up till the ninth inning. And the curveball was working, the changeup was working. In the post game, I think it may have been Kevin McAlpin was talking with Snitker about how Newcomb been talking about how he'd been trusting his stuff more. And, you know, I actually go back, like his start in the beginning of this week against Florida was not really efficient, but he actually only gave up one run. So it was the four starts before that. So he was starting to come around, and my God, it all came together today and just the best start of his career. I think it's pretty safe to say.
Yeah.
So, Ham, this was really, really special.
Yeah, and I think the beginning of much more to come, right? I mean, he feels like a pitcher that has another no-hitter in him. I know how hard it is to get there, but it came so effortlessly to him today, as you said. I mean, it was just such an easy domination. It seemed like he was in control of every pitch almost until that last one, you know, and just so amazing. And so I think it's so exciting that, you know, I mean, he's still growing as per the four starts before that you referenced. But this is his ceiling, right? This is in him. And it's so exciting for next year and the year beyond just to have that.
Ace, number one, right?
Maybe no, Sean Newcomb stuff. is our number one. Certainly feels like one today.
And I hope there's something to the fact that he did this against a really, really potent Dodgers lineup. You know, the Dodgers, probably the favorites to win the NL pennant right now. Sure. Because some of his toughest starts this season, worst starts, really, Boston, New York, right? But this was now, while those were on the road and this was at home, this is against a really, really tough lineup. So maybe it will also give him some confidence about, I can pitch my best stuff to the best that there is in the majors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with foundational stuff with he and Folty, I mean, it's just, you know, you watch this, they're just developing. This is a year where they're still growing so much, and it points to much brighter things to both of them. I mean, and for the Braves, obviously, you have those guys 1 and 2 in your rotation. It's going to be pretty awesome to behold.
Yeah, in the post game, they were talking to Snitker. I thought was also kind of interesting because, you know, Newcomb had I don't remember when it was, but a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, he had a no hitter going, but he was taken out in the sixth, and Snitker had said at the in the post game then that he was always going to take him out, he wasn't going to let him go, but he said he knew by about the sixth or the seventh this game that he was going to let him stay until he either, you know, gave up a hit or gave up 2 walks, because he wasn't worried about his pitch count. Because he said he just looked so at ease. He just wasn't struggling with any of his mechanics. It was all so put together that he was just going to let him go as long as he, you know, was keeping it.
Yeah, went to like 135 pitches or something.
Yeah, it was 134. I saw a tweet that said it was the most pitches by a starting pitcher this year.
Mm.
which is not surprising in this day and age. But all right, so guys, on a less positive note, the rest of the month of July.
July.
Hello. So let's take a look at this month. So all the numbers are before Sunday's win against the Dodgers. 20 games in July, where the Braves have gone 7-13. Not a surprise. They haven't won a series since the sweep in St. Louis. They've only lost or split. The offense in the month of July has slashed 245, 310, 387 with a WRC plus, a weighted runs created plus of 87. 100 is good. So compare that with April, where they slashed 268, 342, 440 with a WRC plus of 108. The starting pitching in July has posted a 518 ERA and a 514 FIP, averaging 5 1/3 innings per start. Compare that to April, where they posted a 342 ERA and a 430 FIP, averaging that same 5.1 innings pitched, which is kind of interesting. I just figured when I went back to April that the average innings pitched was going to be a little higher, but of course it just explains all of the awful bullpen stuff. The bullpen in July, a 4.53 ERA, a 4.62 FIP. Compare that to a 3.94 ERA and 3.97 FIP in April. I mean, it has been a grim month. No starting pitching, other than, Anibal, really. The offense has gone to sleep. The bullpen we've talked about ad nauseum. So, Kurt, what do you think about this month? Is this a regression to the mean? Is this the what everyone thought the Braves were going to be this year? Or can they work out of it?
I think this is maybe a little below what people thought. But they've been outscored by 22 runs this month, which that's a trend that is a complete opposite of what they've been doing. Basically every month they've outscored their opponents by 20 runs. Practically, and then you hit this month and they just haven't been able to score, which is indicated by those numbers that you gave. But yeah, I think that this is just sort of them sort of becoming, I think they're getting tired. I think they're some of the injuries are catching up to them. The schedule has been tougher. And I think that that's just a culmination of all those things. I'm sort of shocked that the bullpen numbers were not worse than what you even gave. I mean, 4.5 seems almost impressive with
right.
what I was
sure
expecting
if,
in my brain.
If we dug into WHIP and, walks per nine and stuff, it would paint an uglier picture.
And
inherited runs that they've allowed to score or runners that they've allowed to score that end up being obviously nailed onto the starters' ERAs. But yeah, I mean, everything is sort of slowed down. I mean, I thought at the beginning of the year they were going to maybe win 70 something games. And this probably would have put them more on track for that winning percentage. But I think it's just a culmination of all these things that have come together and this is where they are. You sort of hope every time I think that they're going to sort of break out of a rut, they either have to face a really good team or they shoot themselves in the foot.
Hammy?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with everything Kurt said. I think the on paper or whatever, this is an average team. We overperformed in April. And a lot of things clicked that you can't predict would click or expect to click, but it covered up some of our inefficiencies. But we're an average baseball team. We have some very bright spots, some exciting pieces, but a lot of holes, too many holes that a trade is not going to fix. And I think that we've gotten sort of lucky that Philadelphia has also regressed to the mean a little bit. And the Nats have even done more than that, whatever more than regressing to the mean is. And so it has, we haven't lost as much ground, but I think we are a 500 baseball team or less. And we have some, we have a lot of weak spots. Dansby is not great. Ender is not great. Flowers is not great when he's in there. So the offense is inconsistent. We're still hitting the ball, but our run production has gone down. So I just think I think this is who we are, and I think we should be happy with that. A couple years ago, we were a horrible team. and we built this and we were competing, but I think it, I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think this is our year. I think we're a ways away.
So the optimist in me says that if the starting pitching can get better, then that can really change everything. Because I do believe that the offense can break out of this. If Acuña starts to hit, you know, Markakis isn't going to stop. Freddie's been a bit inconsistent. Ender has shown a few signs of life over the last couple of weeks. But, I mean, Fried is now here. Newcomb's put together one good and one astoundingly good start in a row. Folty had a terrible July. So, theoretically, his August will be better. Anibal, our ace, will just keep doing what he's doing. Julio will be gone in 2 days when Chris Archer comes. You know, I mean, stuff's gonna change.
Yeah, but it's not enough. It's not enough.
Well, and you know, they started 19-11. Since then, they are literally a 500 team. I mean, yeah. They are, and so it's like a hot start that is sort of the. I mean, that the sample size is that they are a 500 team, and I say that with all respect because, as Hamilton said. I think that even if we went into this and people said 81 and 81 this year, that people would have really been excited about that. That would have been a big step forward.
Yeah.
And people now sort of clamoring to make these big moves and sort of give up pieces of our future. I think if they were sitting at 500, which is effectively what they are. I mean, you know, if you were Pittsburgh or you're St. Louis, I don't know that those fans are sitting there thinking, man, we need to make a bunch of trades to get back in this. And, that's sort of where they are.
So I get that, Kurt, except they really are, what, 7 or 8 games over 500 and a game and a half out of first.
Sure.
I mean, they could
win the
NL East and go to the playoffs, and who knows what happens. I'm not saying give up a bunch of top 10 prospects for rentals, but – I believe this is what Anthopoulos is doing. If he can improve the team with controllable assets, he can and he should, because there is an opportunity here this year. I don't want to do it for rentals.
Yeah, and you mentioned something when we were texting with each other the other night about that. Basically, he's told teams that the top 9 prospects are untouchable for rentals. I guess.
Yeah,
which
I heard on MLB Network. For rentals, exactly, which is why we get Johnny Venters and Brad Brock for
international slot money.
Yeah, which is great. And what a very clever way for him to use that money to get some fresh arms in here. But it's why we're not even giving up, you know, Whistler or Sims, which are kind of the guys that would have gotten rentals for us. I mean, the rental market has not been really robust, but he's not willing to do it.
And good
which,
on him.
You know, but Whistler or Sims, come on, man, it would have been.
Sure.
Yeah, but you're not getting anything for them. What are you getting for those guys? You're getting nothing.
I think people would be willing to.
For rentals, for guys that they're going
to
lose
this
month?
Yeah, to see if they could get something out of Whistler or Sims. I mean, you're not going to get much, but I think people would still see some potential in those guys.
Well, so guys, we've kind of started our trade deadline conversation. So let's go back a little bit and just talk about the two new arms in the bullpen. So Johnny Venters, who we all are very familiar with, obviously a great story, nice homecoming. He is a moderate improvement as a lefty-lefty matchup guy. And his slash against lefties this year is good. I mean, slash against is 148, 258, 259. And then on Sunday, the Braves acquired Brad Brock from the Orioles, whose numbers are awful. You know, I mean, his slash against is 303, 375, 455. His whip is almost 1.8. He's walking almost 4.5 per 9. On the other hand, he's reunited with some past coaches. His ground ball rate is almost 67. And he's got, you know, I mean, he's leaving the worst team in baseball.
Yeah, and he was great up until this season.
Right.
Yeah.
Two years ago, he was really, really great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not hard to believe that change of scenery and moving to the NL and this guy could be.
So who does he replace? Have they announced?
No.
Luke Jackson? Freeman?
I mean, Luke Jackson is the right. So it should be Shane Carl. I mean, it should. Right. He's a righty. Luke Jackson's the long guy. They refuse to get rid of Freeman. It's going to be Shane Carl, I think. We will see tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I mean, I will point out that the BABIP for him is 374. So that's a lot of bad luck.
Yeah, that is bad luck. Yep. No, I mean, this guy, you know, there's good in this and there's bad in this statement, which is even with his numbers right now, he's better than three or four guys in our bullpen.
Yeah.
take that for the good and the bad.
Right.
But guys, let's talk about what may be to come. So reports the last couple of days are that the Braves are looking at Chris Archer. There had been reports a week or so ago about Stroman. We saw Colby Allard get scratched from his start on Sunday. Now, the beat guys were clear that it wasn't because he's injured and it wasn't because he's being traded. Grant McCauley tweeted a few hours ago, we're recording this Sunday, that expect to see Allard in the starting rotation this coming week. But it also doesn't mean that they're doing that because they know a starter's getting traded. You know, that could be part of the Allard thing. So, Ham, what do you think is going to happen over these next few days?
Nothing.
No more, not even a middling relief arm for another international slot?
I feel like I appreciate that he gave up international slot money, which is, you know, we'll never see. We will never feel the impact of that, right? So it's
right, because
like
they were so hamstrung they could only spend $300,000 on guys because of the copy heart stuff.
Yeah, so I mean that's very shrewd. I love it. And to get Venters and this guy who could come back is great. But I don't think they should give up anything. I just think, you know, over the last 53 games or since the Boston series, we are below .500. All of our pitchers, Folty, Tehran, Newcomb, Sanchez are all .500 pitchers. Our bullpen is horrible. I just don't think – I think we're not there yet. We're not there yet. We bring in a better bat to play for catcher, you know, or to play third and then move Camargo to the bench to be a strong bench player. We need another starter, and we need a bit of a bullpen overhaul. And we can't do it all this season, so I would rather keep what we have than make a rental this year. I don't think this is our year.
Yeah, but him, he's not going to do it. He's not going to give up anything of value for a rental. But you know, Chris Archer is not a free agent until 2022.
Yeah.
It would improve us next year and would help us while we're in this really prime position right now. Why wouldn't you want to improve the team? I don't mean to say it like that. Why wouldn't you want things to
because
be better,
I hate
Hammy?
Because I
yeah,
hate
exactly.
Them.
But I mean, but if you're getting a legitimate starter,
yeah, so I don't
that
think
you
Chris
have
Archer
under
is.
Control. Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, I mean, I don't
three
have
seasons
Chris
in a row of a four of a he's three seasons in a row of a 4.0 or higher ERA. So he's got a great K to walk ratio. It's like almost 10-1 his K to walk ratio. Filthy stuff, but people still score off of him. And I know a little bit.
Well, he does play in the
play
AL
in the
East.
AL East exactly.
Anyway, I don't know. I like our guys better.
Well, I guess my concern with our guys, which I mean, I love the influx of talent that we're going to continue to see over the years. But my concern is that at some point you're going to have to fill a gap because we sort of talked about this before. You're going to have young guys that are going to be coming up every year. And obviously they're probably going to be on innings counts and things like that. So you can't just continue to fill multiple spots in your rotation with two new rookies every year because at some point – you're going to run into some problems with that. And you're going to, you know, they're all not going to hit. They're all not going to be Newcomb and Folty. So.
I know, but Archer hasn't hit yet. I mean, maybe Stroman. I sound like a broken record, but like, I think he would madden us like Tehran has. I think he is Tehran. I think his ceiling is filthy stuff where he can beat, you know, go head to head against the best starters out there and beat them. And then he can turn around and give up three homers in the first. I mean, that's Archer. He is Tehran.
Yeah, I guess my concern about Archer is that the Padres are really interested in him too, and if anybody can match up with us farm system-wise, it's the Padres, and so I would hate to sort of get in a bidding war with the Padres and end up maybe overpaying with prospects to outbid the Padres for Chris Archer.
Yeah, my only response to that, Kurt, is Anthopoulos seems like he's being very protective of the prospects, so I just don't think he would do it. I just don't think he's going to overpay. I mean, I think he agrees more with Hammy that, look, you know, this team has a lot of holes. I can't fill them all. But if he can make a deal which he thinks is reasonable, I think he does it. And my God, I would just love to get another starter in here.
I think because it's the trade deadline and we need, you know, we don't have leverage here. We would overpay for Archer, for Stroman. Right. We need a starter, obviously, but I think it's we're going to overpay for those guys.
I mean, do you guys have a list of names that you'd be willing to give up for a frontline starter? And I don't even consider Chris Archer a frontline starter.
Me either.
But I mean, is that guy just now sort of the starting point with all this kind of stuff?
It'd be Allard or Gohara, I would think.
I mean, is Gohara still really considered that high of a? I mean, it seems this year might have put some taint on his prospects.
I think that Gohara with a couple other guys could bring a legitimate major leaguer back.
Yeah.
Archer?
Yes.
What's the package we have to give up for Archer? That's your opinion?
I don't know, Ham. I'm not good at this game.
Yeah, I know.
But I would, you know, I would give up Gohara. I would give up Allard as the start of the package. I would.
One or the other, but not both.
Probably not both. And I don't know that I'm giving up Pache as part of that. Yeah. But yes, I would give up a top 10 and then a 10 to 20 for Archer or Stroman. I would. The farm system's crazy deep. These guys would be under control for years and would make the starting rotation deeper and better.
Yeah, to echo Ham, I don't think they're doing much. I think if he can pull off a trade, then like a big trade. But I think, like you said, Steve, I think he's being super protective of the prospects, and he's not just going to. There's too many holes for this team right now to sort of get where they need to be, which is two steps, not just one step.
And you're paying a premium
from where they are.
Wait till the offseason. You're paying a premium.
And do we think that Liberty Media has got any intentions of like signing free agents come the end of this year? I mean, I know that we always sort of talk about trades, but I mean, do we think that they're going to open up the checkbooks and maybe bring in some guys that they're actually going to pay to come in here?
I mean, the Braves are supposed to have $40-50 million in salary this offseason.
Relief.
So, yeah.
I bet they do.
I bet they do as well.
Wait till then. Wait till then.
All right, guys. Next up is Shot in the Dark, but first, a quick break. All right. Shot in the Dark, our crazy predictions for the week that just ended. And we'll begin with our listener Shot in the Dark from J.W. Farling, who predicted that Acuna and Freeman would each hit three homers this week and that the Braves would be leading the East by two games or more. So, Acuna and Freddie each had one homer, both during that blowout game against the Marlins at the start of the week. And the Braves, as we mentioned earlier, are 1.5 games out of first. So, not quite there, JW, but thanks for playing. And now let's see how the three of us did. So, Ham, deuces were wild. Thank you. And you had Acuna hitting two homers, two doubles, two runs, and two steals. Now, unfortunately, it was mostly ones across the board. One homer, one double, one steal. He did score four runs. Curtis, you had the Braves beating Kershaw and that the Dodgers giving up 10 more earned runs, Dodger starters giving up 10 more earned runs than the Braves starters. We decidedly did not beat Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, of all the bad shots in the dark I've done this year, this might be the worst.
And the Braves starters gave up 10 earned runs, so the Dodgers 5. All right, and I had the Marlins scoring only one run or less in the two games in Miami, and it was in play after the first game when the Marlins scored only one, but then Julio happened in game two, and I lost that one pretty quickly. All right, so guys, no winners for July. We are on to August, where 2 months of glory will be on the line. So, Hammy, what do you have this week?
I say that Albies hits over 300 and hits two or more homers.
All righty. Curtis, how about you?
The Braves go 5-2 this week. The starters give up 18 runs or less over these seven games.
All righty. That would be good. I predict that the Braves are going to trade for a starting pitcher and that he gives up no more than 2 earned runs in his first start as a Braves this week. All right, so folks, remember, you get to play each week too. Don't forget to get your shot in the dark in before first pitch on Monday before the Marlins game via Twitter. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show, and you could win an ABT koozie if you hit it exactly. And Hammy, thank you for your instant message there. Yeah, we forgot Chipper. I forgot Chipper. So, right, in the midst of this very eventful Sunday, Chipper Jones was, of course, inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I thought that we would celebrate Chipper by sharing our own personal sort of favorite memory of Chipper, go around the table, and I'll start. So the year was 2010. It was the first game that I brought my oldest son to. He was 10 at the time, and he was starting to become a baseball fan. I mean, he had gone when he was a little kid, you know, with Cub Scouts or whatever. But this was like, we were really going, we were really going to watch the game. He knew the players, he was going to be into it. And it was the second game of the season. The Cubs were in town. The Braves were down 2-1 in the bottom of the eighth. And Chipper came up and hit a 2-run homer to take the lead. And, you know, one, the place just went bonkers. My son went crazy. It made him a Chipper fan for life. It was, you know, quickly followed by Billy Wagner coming out because we had just signed him. And he comes out to enter Sandman, and the whole stadium is just rocking and dancing, and the Braves won. And it really hooked my son forever on the team. And I'll just always remember that Chipper moment. Hammy, nice. What do you got?
I mean, obviously a ton of them. And, you know, you look at sort of where his stats stack up against switch hitters and players of, you know, third baseman, And it's just amazing how great he was. But the moment for me was September 2nd, 2012. So this was his last homer as a major leaguer. It was like off of Papelbon. And the Braves were down 5-3 heading into the final inning. And he hit a 3-run walk-off to beat the Phillies on our way to clinch the wild card to lose to the Cardinals
in
2012.
Right.
But his final homer. He had a tough season that last season, but I don't know, that was just a great moment for him to sort of have that down the stretch there was great.
Curtis, how about you?
Well, ironically, of all the
no way
the memories, it was that one that I picked. Maybe we should have covered this before the show. So we didn't, of all, you know, the 20-year career, and we double up on one of them. So yeah, it was I just love that home run against Papelbon. And if anything, just to be able to mention Lyle Overbay's name on the podcast one more time, because he got on base in that inning. So Chipper, you know, it's great. I don't know. You think about his career, just to touch on something that, you know, he was a Hall of Fame third baseman. He was willing to play the outfield so they could bring Vinny Castilla in, you know, I mean, just very selfless in his play for the Braves. And, you know, it's just amazing that we were able to watch his entire career here. And some of those injuries is probably like Smoltz. I mean, the year he tore his knee up against Houston, and we were really going great, and that sort of ruined the season us.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's awesome to see him get in.
Yeah, I thought it was cool in his speech on Sunday that he talked about Don Baylor. And that although, you know, he was his hitting coach for only 1 year, what a huge impact Baylor had. You know, convincing him that, look, you can hit as much power from both sides of the plate. And, it, you know, I mean, he really attributes his MVP season to Baylor in that speech. It's really, really good stuff and something I hadn't really read before.
Yeah, I saw one thing, and it's sort of, you know, he's got the big thing with Mickey Mantle. Obviously, they were both switch hitters, and somebody noted that his speech went 19. I mean, this is just one of those weird little things, but his speech went 19 minutes and 51 seconds. So 1951, which was also the first year that Mickey Mantle played in the major leagues.
That's kind of awesome. Oh, man. He tells a really good, I encourage people, if you haven't seen the speech, to go check it out. He, toward the end, he tells a very good Mickey Mantle story where he met him early in his career, Chipper's, that is, of course, at a card show. and a conversation you had with Mickey Mantle. Good stuff. All right, guys. So let's talk about the week ahead. Seven games coming up this week. Three at home with the Marlins, four on the road against the Mets. And we'll take a look at the pitching matchup. So first is a rematch of last Tuesday's day game as Tehran faces Y.Yi Chen and his 5.65 ERA. Hopefully we get good Julio on Monday night. Next up, Anibal Sanchez faces Dan Straley and his 4.07 ERA. Straley has faced the Braves twice this season and given up two earned runs total. So finishing up with the Marlins, it'll be Folty versus Pablo Lopez in his 5.34. So on to the Mets, where Max Fried gets his next start. He'll face Jason Vargas in his 8.36 ERA. Remember, Vargas was the guy really embattled. He had an ERA over 10 when he faced the Braves at the end of May and then shut the team out for five innings. Like, his ERA dropped, like, 2 points.
That's the profile of a Braves killer. Double-digit really ERA. Can't beat anybody.
Next up will be Newcomb, coming off his almost no-hitter. He will face DeGrom and his 182. That is a very sexy matchup. So that will be Monday, Tuesday. That'll be Friday, I guess. Yeah, that's Friday night. Game three in New York, Tehran gets his second start of the week versus Zach Wheeler in his 4.11. And then finishing up with the Mets, Anibal Sanchez gets his second start of the week. He will face Steven Matz and his 3.79 ERA. So, Curtis, what do you think happens this week? What's the record?
I already said it, 5-2.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I feel good about 5-2 as well, you know, with that new starting pitcher coming in and all. It's going to change everything. Amy?
4-3, 2-1, 2-2.
All right. Big next 48 hours. We'll see what happens. See what happens with Anthopoulos in the front office. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access all of our shows and to post in our comment section. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.